movements and right-wing movements than it is to strong left-wing or socialist movements. I'm wondering your sense of what the future holds.
Well, I think what we're seeing in my own sense of, and I follow it quite closely.
And we have about a minute and a half left. Yeah.
Particularly in Europe, is that you're seeing the fruits of the last 75 years. We've lived in a country that has been beset by the Cold War, that is lost in this notion of a great struggle between capitalism and socialism, in which you can't allow anything on the left to get very far without repression by the government or without unfair treatment in the media. So I'm not so surprised that as the situation unravels, the first instinct of people is to be responsive to the right, which has been able to function in the Western world much more freely than the left has. But I don't find that at all surprising. I think when the people of this country realize how few solutions the right wing has. Look at what Mr. Trump didn't achieve in all the things he promised. Then you'll see an appreciation that maybe we ought to try the left. The crucial question is whether the left will be courageous enough to say what's going on and to offer a real alternative.
Well, Richard Wolff, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Professor Emeritus of Economics at the University of Massachusetts, now visiting professor at the New School here in New York, founder of Democracy at Work, host of Economic Update, author of a number of books, including The Sickness in the System, When Capitalism Fails to Save Us from Pandemics or Itself. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
Tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Kendall Northwest Launch Party on Thursday, July 30th from 5:45 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Jaja PDX in Portland. Kendall Northwest is a new circus and fine arts festival, including intro courses in the fire arts, fire spinning, live music, and competitive circus games. That's the Kendall Northwest Launch Party on Thursday, July 30th from 5:45 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Jaja PDX, 819 Southeast Taylor Street in Portland. That's the Kendall Northwest Launch Party on Thursday, July 30th from 5:45 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Jaja PDX, 819 Southeast Taylor Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Every single person since SB8 has been a law has needed to travel out of state. Every single person that's reached our line.
We've been clinging on to Roe versus Wade and the protection that it offered. And it feels as though that protection is being taken away from us. So it feels as though this is a moment of survival. And I think any moments of survival can be very scary.
What did abortion access look like in America when Roe was the law of the land? Tune into KBOO's Roe on the Rocks, a limited series podcast where I investigate this question as I take you through the months leading up to the U.S. Supreme Court decision that effectively overturned Roe. That's Roe on the Rocks, airing Thursdays at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss it.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, former police sentenced for violating George Floyd's civil rights, DEQ issues air quality warning, and in international news, Russia denies responsibility for rising food prices worldwide. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 27th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. Temperatures hit 102 degrees Fahrenheit in Portland yesterday, with Tuesday expected to be the hottest day of an unusually long heat wave. It was a new daily record for the city for July 26th, beating the previous mark set in 2020. Seattle also reported a new all-time daily high of 94 degrees, breaking the previous record of 92 from 2018. In Washington State, records were also set in Bellingham at 90 degrees and the capital, Olympia, at 97 degrees. Temperatures aren't expected to cool in western Oregon and Washington until the weekend. Governor Kate Brown declared a state of emergency across much of Oregon, concerned about utility outages and transportation disruptions. There has been an approximately tenfold increase in the number of people reporting heat-related illness in emergency departments, and heat-related calls to emergency service numbers have also increased. Portland officials opened cooling centers in public buildings and installed misting stations in some parks. Multnomah County sites have a no-turn-away policy. Many libraries extended their hours, staying open until 8 or 9 p.m. to allow people more time to cool off. TriMet has been allowing passengers to ride for free when headed to cooling centers if they declare their destination. Last summer's heat dome weather phenomenon also prompted record temperatures and deaths. About 800 people died in Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia during the 2021 June and early July heat wave. The temperature reached an all-time high of 116 degrees in Portland. In response, Oregon passed a law requiring all new housing built after April of 2024 to have air conditioning installed in at least one room. While temperatures this week are not expected to get that high, the anticipated number of consecutive hot days has raised concerns. Officials have warned residents of Portland, Vancouver, and the Willamette Valley to take extra precautions because of poor air quality. These warnings are issued because of elevated levels of ozone pollution, or smog. The alert was made by the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality yesterday. Levels are particularly unhealthy for children, people age 65 and older, those who are pregnant, and people with heart disease or respiratory conditions. It's especially important for people in those groups to limit time outside. Temperatures rose into the 100 degree plus range yesterday in Portland. Ozone forms when exhaust from cars, gas-powered engines, and even chemicals react with sunlight and heat to produce ozone and haze. Windless days make the situation even worse when pollutants won't be blown away. Pollution levels tend to be higher during late afternoons and early evenings when it is sunnier. To improve air quality, DEQ recommends turning off idling engines, delaying the use of lawn mowers or leaf blowers, and gassing up vehicles during cooler evening hours. The air advisory will be in place until Saturday night. Easter Seals Oregon helps older state residents seeking employment. Eric Tegetoff has more on the story.
Older Oregonians looking to re-enter the workforce face a number of barriers. An organization in the state is helping them with training and a network of partnerships. At Easter Seals Oregon, the Senior Community Service Employment Program trains people age 55 and over who need a job. Michelle Bowers with the program says older folks need these services for reasons including homelessness, a medical crisis, and losing a spouse who may have earned the bulk of their income.
Folks come to us to get retrained and learn new skills and boost their confidence and build a network, and we retrain them and we send them out into the community in internships to do that.
Easter Seals Oregon partners with nonprofits and state and federal government agencies in 30 counties across the state. The pandemic has affected older people in the workforce, but a survey found there was an 8% increase in Oregon workers over 55 between August 2020 and 2021. Patricia Robinson, a Eugene resident in her 70s, received training through Easter Seals Oregon. She says she was struggling to pay her bills, and after working temporary gigs, wanted to find a lasting job.
I started with not even knowing how to turn on and off a computer. I can now do into the computer any type of programming, any type of demands that is required from the company or the training process I'm in.
Robinson now works as a job coach at Lane Community College. She says there are supports out there for older folks, but understands it can be hard to reach out.
Going alone is the scariest part, but you're not. And just take one step. That's all you need. Go one step forward and you will see there is someone there to help you and to get what you need.
The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates one in four workers will be 55 or older by 2030. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
Families in Washington state are facing food access issues. A number of groups are trying to help. Once again, Eric Tegetoff has more.
When school districts aren't able to provide summer school classes, it can have a big effect on how children get meals. Case in point, the Mount Adams School District in the Yakima Valley, where staffing shortages mean about 800 kids won't have breakfast and lunch meal options this summer. Groups like Yakima Valley Partners for Education and the Peacekeeper Society are stepping up to fill the gap in communities like White Swan and Hera. Susie Diaz with Yakima Valley Partners for Education says a confluence of issues is leading families to choose low-quality foods.
Families will go for low cost, but also low nutrition, because it's something that is easier for families to access. And our hope is that we can all work together to support the families during this time.
Diaz says inflation and high transportation costs are putting pressure on local families. Her organization provides food access that's culturally relevant for the region, with its high percentage of residents of Latin heritage. She adds they have to cancel their event this week because of a heat advisory. Carmen Mendez with Northwest Harvest says they've been asked to support families in the Yakima Valley and are trying to find ways to help, even as they deal with their own supply chain issues. She says there's a sad irony to the situation in the region.
They're surrounded by apple orchards as far as the eyes can see, and hops and everything else, yet they don't get to experience or enjoy any of that bounty of the valley.
Mendez says a new Northwest Harvest distribution site in the Yakima Valley should be set up by December, when the group hopes to partner with local farmers to provide food access. Diaz says families are in a difficult situation, but are thankful for the support they're receiving.
It's always nice to see people come up and be very surprised and express their gratitude for just having community rally around them.
About one in six Washington kids lives in a household facing challenges to putting enough food on the table, according to Northwest Harvest. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Over the past week, the Oak Fire has been spreading near Yosemite National Park, but continued efforts by thousands of firefighters have led to 32% containment. As of yesterday, the Oak Fire had already forced about 6,000 residents of mountainous communities to evacuate, as well as burned down 41 homes and buildings. It swept through rural towns and engulfed 28 square miles. Nearly 3,000 firefighters have been working tirelessly to extinguish the flames. They've had a recent success with the fire, 32% contained, as of today, according to CAL FIRE. Significant progress has been made in containing the Oak Fire, and communities hope that it continues to be under control in the days ahead. Today, a federal judge sentenced two former Minneapolis police officers involved in the murder of George Floyd to lighter terms than recommended in sentencing guidelines. They were convicted of violating George Floyd's civil rights. The judge called one defendant, quote, truly a rookie officer, end quote, and described the other as, quote, a good police officer, father and husband, end quote. U.S. District Judge Paul Magnuson sentenced J. Alexander King to 3 years in prison and Tu Tao to 3.5 years for their involvement in the May 25th, 2020 Floyd murder. In that crime, then-officer Derek Chauvin pinned Floyd's neck with his knee for more than 9 minutes as Floyd said he couldn't breathe. The killing, captured on bystander video, sparked protests of racial injustice worldwide. King pinned Floyd's back, and Tao restrained concerned bystanders. Sentencing guidelines on the federal counts called for 4.25 to 5.25 years for King and 5.25 to 6.5 years for Tao. In both cases, prosecutors argued for sentences within that range or longer. The lower sentences raised questions about whether the defendants would consider a plea deal rather than risk an October trial in which they face counts of aiding and abetting second-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter. The federal government brought civil rights charges against four officers in May 2021, a month after Chauvin was convicted of murder and manslaughter in state court. They also came a week after federal prosecutors brought hate crime charges in the murder of Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia. The judge here said there was no question that King violated Floyd's rights by failing to get off him when Floyd became unresponsive. But he also cited what he called an incredible number of letters supporting the former officer from fellow police. Both men are scheduled to report to federal prison on October 4th, though the judge noted that could change because of their state trial. Floyd's immediate family members did not attend today's hearings or comment immediately thereafter. One of the few benefits of getting COVID was the resulting immunity to reinfection. But the newest Omicron subvariant, BA5, has caused more people to catch COVID for the second or third time than previous strains. BA5 has a highly mutated structure that maximizes its ability to evade immunity. That mutated structure also increases its capacity to be transmitted from person to person more easily than other strains. Helix is a company that sequences COVID-19 tests. They found that the percentage of reinfections almost doubled in July with BA5 dominant compared to May, when the BA2 strain caused most infections. The Helix data showed that most reinfections in July occurred in people who had COVID-19 in 2021. The rate of reinfections is expected to continue to climb because BA5 is highly contagious and the majority of the country has already contracted COVID-19 at least once. No one knows the full scope of reinfections because people are testing at home, if at all. But researchers feel confident chances are higher of getting COVID again if you had the virus or your most recent vaccine dose prior to 2022. The U.S. Department of Justice has opened its own investigation into the January 6th attack on the Capitol and the events that led up to it. Investigators have specifically questioned witnesses about former President Trump's involvement in trying to overturn the vote and have gotten hold of the phone records of some Trump officials, like former Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. Attorney General Merrick Garland told NBC that the DOJ was, quote, moving urgently to learn everything we can learn about this period and to bring to justice everybody who is criminally responsible for interfering with the peaceful transfer of power, end quote. Garland was asked if Trump being a candidate for president, an announcement many expect him to make soon, would affect the investigation. He said they would hold accountable anyone who was criminally responsible for attempting to interfere with the legitimate, lawful transfer of power from one administration to the next. The Department of Justice investigation into January 6th is separate from the House committee that has been holding public hearings in the last month or so. That committee can make recommendations to the DOJ on possible criminal charges if they think they apply. You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KABU News in Depth. We'll be speaking with Piper McDaniel from Street Roots about their new reporting on the Eviction for All campaign. At 5:45, stick around for News from the Boo, your look at the news inside KABU. At 6, it's The Underground. At 8, Ditch Digger. Tonight's weather will show clear skies with a low of 67. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 99. Today in history, in 1789, the first United States federal agency, the Department of Foreign Affairs, was established. It was later renamed as the Department of State. The quote of the day is from Norman Lear, American screenwriter and producer who was born on July 27th in 1922. Lear said, "You can't change people's minds, but you can get them to think." U.S. braces for negative economic report. Trump back in D.C. And Fauci discusses emergency declaration related to monkeypox. With more on these stories, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Two negative quarters of GDP growth is not the technical definition of recession.
As the White House braces for a potentially dour economic report, National Economic Advisor Brian Deese told reporters the nation's fiscal stability is measured by more than GDP and inflation.
The most important question economically is whether working people and middle-class families have more breathing room, they have more job opportunities, their wages are going up in a stable way, and they're able to afford important things in their lives.
New GDP numbers will be released tomorrow, which analysts predict will be negative for the second quarter in a row. On Tuesday, new data revealed consumer confidence fell in July to the lowest level since February 2021. The economy is a sticking point for voters, As a CNN poll finds, 3/4 of Democratic and Democratic-leaning voters want someone other than President Joe Biden nominated by the party for the 2024 election. 32% said it's because they don't want him reelected, while 24% said it's because they don't think Biden can win. Biden will reportedly speak with Chinese President Xi this week in an attempt to quell escalating tensions over Taiwan and trade. The call comes as U.S. officials reiterated warnings of China's posing a long-term threat to national security. Meanwhile, the bill to make the U.S. semiconductor industry more competitive with China advanced in the Senate on a 64-34 vote.
This bill is going to cut costs for people, it's going to bring jobs home, and it's going to strengthen our national security. And it's a big deal.
Michigan Democrat Debbie Stabenow says it would provide $54 billion in grants and a tax credit, covering 25% of investments in semiconductor manufacturing through 2026. For the first time since leaving office, former President Donald Trump was back in D.C., where he spoke before a conservative think tank. He focused on criminal justice reform and his continued claims the 2020 election was stolen from him. In a speech nearby, his vice president, Mike Pence, shot down suggestions the party is divided, but argued Republicans need to find a path forward.
I truly do believe that elections are about the future, and that it's absolutely essential at a time when so many Americans are hurting, so many families are struggling, that we don't give way to the temptation to look back.
Still, though, the appearances suggest gaps linger between the pair, as Pence drew about 250 attendees and Trump nearly 800. White House Chief Medical Advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci says health officials are considering making an emergency declaration around monkeypox.
There are now over 80 countries throughout the world who have cases, more than 16,000 cases in non-endemic countries. So this is something we're taking very seriously.
Fauci noted while monkeypox primarily affects men who have sex with men, it's especially concerning for those already diagnosed with a viral infection like HIV. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman.
The U.S. Postal Service has announced that 40% of its new fleet will be electric vehicles. Lily Bolke speaks with an expert in Michigan who says electrifying the vehicles will lower costs for the service and be better for communities.
The U.S. Postal Service is buying nearly 85,000 new vehicles and estimates about 40% of them will be electric vehicles. That includes 50,000 new delivery trucks, about half of which will be electric. Groups that advocate for EV adoption say it's a big step in the right direction, but think the percentage should be even higher. Bruce Westlake with the East Michigan Electric Auto Association says mail trucks do a lot of starting and stopping and spend a lot of time parked, and points out that EVs are well equipped for that.
The maintenance of a postal service vehicle probably includes a lot of repair of brakes. And if you look at the past record for electric vehicles, brakes are the one thing they don't go through very often because that's recovered through the motor itself through regenerative braking.
Under the original USPS plan, only 10% of the vehicles were going to be electric, but they increased it after facing pressure, including a lawsuit from 16 states, DC, and national environmental groups. The USPS Office of the Inspector General has found only about 1.5% of postal routes would be poorly suited to EV deployment because they're longer than 70 miles. Westlake adds, during hot summers, electric delivery trucks should make a big difference for mail carriers in addition to the community.
If we look at the postal workers themselves, about half of their time is parked. They would benefit from having essentially a portable air conditioner to make sure that they're in good working conditions.
The new trucks will be put into use in late 2023, and the Postal Service is extending the public comment period on them until August 15th. Groups hope this purchase will contribute to the Biden administration's goal of electrifying the entire government fleet by 2035. This is Lily Bolke with Michigan News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators for transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Russia's foreign minister denied today his country is responsible for the global surge in food prices following its invasion of Ukraine. He was completing a visit to several African nations on a continent dramatically affected by the rise in food costs. Sergei Lavrov accused the United States and European countries of driving up prices by pursuing what he called reckless green policies and by hoarding food during the COVID-19 pandemic. Lavrov said, quote, "The situation in Ukraine did additionally negatively affect food markets, but not due to the Russian special operation, rather due to the absolutely inadequate reaction of the West, which announced sanctions," end quote. Western countries have actually pointed out that food is exempt from their sanctions in Russia, and they blame Moscow for the emergency. Russia has been a major arms supplier to Africa, but has sent relatively little humanitarian aid.
Many African countries rely on wheat imports from Russia and Ukraine. Famine looms in several areas on the continent, including Ethiopia, during the worst drought seen in decades. While African leaders have visited Moscow to express concern, they have not openly criticized Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. In fact, Ethiopia is expected to host the second Russian-African summit later this year. Lavrov has also claimed most countries do not support Western sanctions on Russia, suggesting relatively few African, Asian, and Latin American nations have joined in. During his visit, state media reported only that Russia and Ethiopia had agreed to strengthen economic ties. Russian energy giant Gazprom has reduced the gas flow in its Nord Stream pipeline to Germany by 50%. Gazprom said it would be cutting their gas supply by 25%. The Russian gas firm said gas flow was down because one of the last two operating turbines had to be halted due to a technical condition of the engine, an argument the German government dismissed as a made-up excuse. A German government spokesperson said, quote, "At this point in time, supply contracts aren't being honored. What we are seeing is indeed power play, and we won't allow ourselves to be impressed by that," end quote. Yesterday, the operator UGAS announced a booking of extra capacity for its Transgas pipeline via Slovakia and Ukraine, raising hopes in Germany. But as of today, no increased deliveries have occurred. Changing what cows eat can improve potential global warming and increase milk production. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. New York is one of the largest dairy-producing states in the nation. It's home to more than 600,000 dairy cows. But Jennifer Whiteman, a senior extension associate at Cornell University, says cows create more than milk. They also produce methane, a climate-warming gas.
The majority of New York State agricultural emissions are methane.
Decomposing manure releases the gas. So do the microbes in the cow's gut as they break down grass and other plant material. The methane is then released to the atmosphere.
From, quite literally, the burps and farts of the cow.
But tweaking a cow's diet can cut those emissions by up to 40%, according to some estimates. Providing feed that's easier to digest, adjusting the proportions of nutrients, and supplementing with certain additives can help reduce the methane produced. Whiteman says it also boosts milk production, because less of the energy contained in the feed goes to waste.
As you improve the feed efficiency of the cow, more of the feedstuffs go into producing milk, and less of the feedstuffs come out as methane.
So she says fine-tuning cows' diets can be a cost-effective way to maximize milk production and minimize climate pollution. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael thinks there were more immediate issues than November elections.
Heard the most frightening radio commercial. Republican congressional candidate in Southwest Washington, Saint something her name. They're going to take our guns away. A local city council candidate is just a hair more subtle in his fear-mongering, but he has a black incumbent to blame everything on. And it's only July. Pence and Trump will begin their presidential campaigns over 2 years before the election. Keep folks distracted, fearful, and divided. We need action now on the planet, on inflation, on war, on bigotry. Maybe some billionaire will step up and ensure the grain shipment so they can leave Ukraine and feed people. Maybe the vaccine companies will say, we made more than enough money so far, the rest of the year's supply is free. I know I can count on friends, neighbors, even most strangers when help is needed. I know corporations, the wealthy, the power seekers, can be counted on to do only what's best for them. I hope I know enough to not get too depressed or hopeless. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 27th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael and Grant Button. The co-producers are Althea Billings and myself, Josh Salem, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Mary Sherman, Lily Bolke, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO, at 7 a.m., it's Democracy Now! At 8, Sojourner Truth Radio. At 9, it's Episode 2 of Roe on the Rocks, a limited series produced at KBOO, tracing the history of abortion rights in America up to the present day. Then at 10, it's American Standoff. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
I'm speaking with Piper McDaniel of Street Roots about a news story published July 27th about evictions in Oregon and the Eviction Representation for All campaign. Welcome, Piper.
Thanks for having me.
So there's a campaign in Multnomah County to create eviction representation for all, looking to address the inequities that tenants face in eviction court. So before we